It's Wednesday, August 29th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 275 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 48 minutes.
Chad, we were setting this up. There was a question that you posed to me.
Yes.
Or at least an observation you made about me, which is that...
You're more summer colors, right?
I thought I was an autumn. I don't remember.
I don't think you do browns very well. I mean, you're wearing khaki shorts.
Generally speaking, I hate earth tones, apart from khaki.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, khaki's very neutral.
Actually, green doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, dude, you're a water sign. Of course you don't like earth tones.
But I feel the testosterone seeping out of my skin trying to run away from this conversation.
No, that's just what's left of your soul.
Yeah, soulless ginger. Red has never been the new black. All right. Anyway, so there's an observation you were making, which is the fact that I don't play a lot of dark characters. Mm-hmm. And what characters I do play, they might be a little bit angsty or a little
They might have a troubled past.
Or be a little bit damaged, but they generally have a
parents were killed in an alley.
Yeah.
At night. And after an opera.
But my characters tend to have a pretty upstanding moral center. Mm-hmm. And I've actually found the same thing is true in video games. That, like, I've tried to do playthroughs of games like Fallout or Mass Effect and play the bad guy.
I'm with you. I can't do it.
And I can only do it for so long. Let me kind of explain why that is. And I want to lead from this to talking about some of the dark characters we have played and how some of those worked out. One of the things that fascinates me, and I don't know if this fascinates any of you guys, but it's always been fascinating to me, is when I look at historical figures, or even people I've known in my life.
Or the historical figures you've known,
known in my life. Right. Yeah. I want to know how they got to be that way. Mm-hmm. How does somebody go from baby in a crib
to Chad?
A lot of mistakes.
Well,
along the way.
Actually, I know that story because I've been there for most of it.
True. But it's not a pretty story, though.
I want to know how does somebody go from baby in a crib to William Gacy? Mm. Or Adolf Hitler.
Right.
You know, what is that journey like? Because it is so easy to take the person and see where they ended up, which is unquestionably these hideous, terrible, terrible places. And we want to dehumanize them. But the fact is, that's not really an honest look at the person. Mm-hmm. Because, like it or not, Adolf Hitler, while he was freaking Adolf Hitler, okay, there's a reason why Hitler is an adjective as much as a noun.
But he was Adolf Hitler before he was Adolf Hitler.
Precisely. He was a human being. All right, now somehow a human being got to be the way that he was. William Gacy, Joseph Stalin. We can go on down the line like this.
Yeah, nobody is the bad guy of their own story.
Yeah, and somehow...
Except Hitler. Always Hitler.
Even that aside, you know, all these people somehow went down a path that made them what they were. And what I found is that when I role play, like Pat, I very much have not this character, but my character. I invest a lot of myself into it. Even when I'm playing a character that's not a whole lot like me, I have to try and understand how they tick. I have to try and understand the logic that goes through their mind and put myself in their shoes. If you gave me a really mindless, barely in-character dungeon crawl, I could play the most twisted, chaotic, evil character you can possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. But when you sit down and say, okay, we're going to play a campaign, and I want you to come up with a character that you're going to play in depth for some period of time, in my brain, I have to put myself in their shoes. I have to think like they think. I want to understand them. And what I found is that if I really do that with any level of fairness or justice, it starts to creep me out. It starts to bother me because it's like, wow, I do not like the person I am having to be, even in just the purely theatrical sense, to understand the character that I am playing. And that's why I don't play too many characters that don't have some kind of a moral center to them.
I can say part of that is the same issue for me. I don't want to get inside the head of that character because that's not fun to me. Mm-hmm. Not that it wouldn't be interesting, not that I wouldn't do it like for a writing exercise or something.
You did it really well in the Sunday game.
Because it was a one-shot.
Yeah.
That's something I don't want to do over time. That's not fun to me. I don't want my mind in that place because that's not a place that I enjoy.
Well, for one shotter, it's like a brief daydream. Yeah. It's not an in-depth exploration.
Exactly. For video games, I actually feel bad for the NPCs. It's crazy.
I'm right there with you, buddy. I am right there with you.
You feel bad for video game NPCs?
I do.
Mooks you're talking about, but like named
characters. Yeah, like if you're a bad guy, let's say Fallout, and you're walking into the city and here's all the happy people walking around the city, my wife would have no problem pulling out the gun and popping them all in the head.
Oh, I have no problem with that. I would
feel bad about those
killing. For example, in Fallout 3, there was no group of NPCs that I wanted to kill more than the little shit bags that inhabited, what was it, Little Mole Town or whatever it was called.
Oh, the all children?
Yeah.
One that didn't make
any
sense.
Man, they were a bunch of bastards. I mean, those guys were freaking evil. And I don't care how old they were. But to me, it was just more, I don't want to explore the kind of character that would walk into Megaton and detonate the bomb just because of the fact that it's obstructing Tenpenny's, or whatever his name was, view. What kind of person would do that?
I get so into it. Because, I mean, in video games, I have been able to play that kind of characters if it's not, like, RPG. Like, the original Postal. I used to love that game. But you're not dealing with characters. You're dealing with pixels on the screen.
In the same way when I played Crackdown, I played a cop who did not care about collateral damage. But
yeah, the difference is,
I didn't have to explore the character. There was a bad guy, I needed him dead, there was a crowd around him, explosives made the most sense. There was no exploration of character. Right, it was just mayhem.
So this is interesting to me, okay, and I get where you're coming from a player standpoint, but let me throw this back on you. As a GM, when you're the GM, you are playing the bad guy. You are exploring that character. You have thought them out. Authors, they get into those characters. I mean, they're writing a story that may have bad people in them. They are in that character's head. And if it's a long series, they're in it for a long time. So what is it about writing this different than a character? And Dan, you've thought out brilliant bad guys. They can be sick, dark, evil people. You're in their head. What's the difference?
I think there's two things. One, I am never rooting for them. With my own character, I want them to succeed. I'm trying to figure out how to further their goals. With my bad guys that are truly irredeemably evil, a demon or something like that, I want it to fail. I want it to be destroyed. I am only trying to figure it out insofar as to play it cogently. I am never trying to crawl around in its head so as to see its uplifting or success.
Writing is the same way.
And secondly, as Wayne said, the vast majority of my bad guys are not so unnuanced. Most of my bad guys, I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying the party has to agree with them. They at least have a point. There will always be at least some dimension of them where I can make a line from where they were to where they are that doesn't have to cross through utter depravity. Even if they're just on the bent of the ends justify the means, the ends they have in mind are at least arguably.
Can you turn that around for a character, though? I mean, can you play a character that's that same way, which is what you describe for your bad guys? Would that work for you? They are sort of, they're on that hairy edge, or they're almost into that sense of depravity, but there's hope for them.
Yes.
Because that's kind
of
what,
and
like, what
Chad
does. And
the handful of dark characters that I have played, and I've not played many, but the handful of characters I've played that were really dark, really twisted, whatever, they fit that latter paradigm. These were characters I was willing to root for because I could at least see some decency in what they were trying to achieve. For example, let's take the one I played most recently, Gnarl. Here's a gnoll. His alignment, I believe, was lawful evil or something to that effect. He was trying to accomplish some things that were very, very questionable. And certainly he did some hideous actions along the way. But what was his basic motivation?
Propagation of his species and culture.
Exactly. Propagation of his species and culture. He wanted to create a society that was more peaceable and sustainable, that could maybe even coexist with humanity. He was repaying a life debt that your character and my character kind of mutually had. They both saved each other's life. And so even though there were a lot of things that he did and a lot of things that he thought that I would find objectionable, there was still a path through that where I could see something deeper to the character, where he wasn't, to use Wayne's phrase, he wasn't just mustache twirling evil.
Yeah, sure.
He was a character that some part of me could root for because at least something about him was and decent.
The other big difference for me is that when you're running a game, you have a lot of NPCs to play with. When you're the player, you typically have that one character, and you're always in that character's head.
Yeah, you spend a lot of time in that pool.
If I have a bad guy, I'm a GM, that bad guy is not going to be on screen, on stage, whatever, the whole time. He's going to be moving things behind the scenes that you don't have to see as much in person. Or if you see him in person, he's going to be there for a session or so.
Actually,
you're dealing with a lot of other things, too.
Wayne?
In my experience with GMing with bad guys at that level, like Wayne is saying, a lot of the stuff that they're doing, a lot of the stuff that they're plotting and planning is happening off screen, so to speak. You can, as a GM, look at it more, I guess, clinically. When you're devising a game, you can look at it a little bit more objectively, and yet while, you're in this person's head and they're this dark and twisted person, all it is to you at that point is a story or a movie or something like that. And, you know, I can handle that kind of stuff when it's on the screen or when I'm reading about it.
And if I'm too uncomfortable, I can switch to another scene with a different NPC that is much lighter.
Well, and also a lot of the times when I'm putting myself in that character's shoes, I am relishing their downfall as much as I am their actions and motivations. There's one bad guy in particular whose name I won't give because he may come up in a campaign that I may yet run, where I have thought at length about what motivates him, what his plans are, how he's doing them. But I've also spent as much time daydreaming about his death scene.
Yeah.
About this guy's ultimate demise, his failure.
Well, and that's the thing with writing is that you have complete control. So in a writing exercise, because you ask about writing exercises, but in that exercise, I know that that character is going to have a downfall. I generally know what that downfall is going to be early on. I'm just making my way to it. Because I like you were saying, I envision the character's downfall. That's a part of that character to me.
See, I kind of take it as from a different tack when I'm running a game. A, I don't have a problem playing bad guys. I guess I'm just morally reprehensible on the inside.
No, I don't think because I like dark characters as well. I don't think that's the case. I like to play dark characters as well. Not really evil, but
dark. And I want to talk about that. Let's move to
that. I'm morally reprehensible on the inside.
Yes.
No, but I I'm not saying people that play dark characters.
But I am curious let's take this from Chad and Pat's standpoint, and Adam, I don't know where you fall on this, but
to Dan and Wayne's point about daydreaming about their death, when I have a character in a game, even if he is the quote-unquote bad guy, I don't have bad guys in my games.
I don't have many.
I don't see them as bad guys. I mean, if I have a bad guy, it might be something that is a force of nature that doesn't have a personality that is an object to be killed and explode and loot and treasure. But I think that if you have a well-rounded, well-written, deep, interesting character, you really can't label them as good and evil. When I look around me and I look at all the people in my life, all my friends, all my family, my coworkers, strangers, everyone around me, I can't point at any of them and say, you are evil, or you are good. People are multifaceted. That's the kinds of characters that game masters should be making. You ask your players to make good, well-rounded characters that have nuance, that have goodness to them, that have evilness to them, that have darkness and have light, and that have potential, the potential to fail and fall and be evil, that have the potential to be redeemed and uplifted and do good, or fall even somewhere in the middle. It is your duty as a game master, if you are asking your players to do that, to present them with NPCs that are also like that. I consider it a success if they go up against somebody that they consider a bad guy, and then they stop and they say, well, wait a minute. You know, I disagree with him, but does that mean we got to kill him
I agree with you. The majority of, we'll call them antagonists for a minute. Yeah. The majority of antagonists in the stories I tell are much more morally gray.
Right.
But even if I would say they are gray leaning to black, that these are people who, you know, once again, let's use good old Hitler. Hitler loved children and animals. And, you know, there was some tiny decency to this utterly horrific character. He was multifaceted. But at the same time, I don't think we could say by any stretch of the imagination that Hitler...
He was good.
Yeah, was good.
He did not have LG on his characters.
No.
But
in the same way.
Even then, from Hitler's perspective,
right,
or his friends and family that surrounded him, those people not me, those people and him would consider him good.
Right. They felt he had an arguable point.
Right.
Really and depends. I would not agree with that, but nonetheless.
It really depends on the feel you're going for in your game, too. Going back to the Batman example, Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Joker is a psychopath and right. a sociopath.
But if you're running a DC game, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the Joker.
Yeah.
You have to think like yeah. the Joker does to play that character.
And that is
out.
Not going to be a character that is not a bad character, but it's still not nuanced.
Is Joker evil or is Joker totally out of touch with reality?
Totally
beyond
out of touch with reality.
Redemption. Yeah.
Beyond redemption.
Yeah.
Those, I think, are potentially good bad guys for certain types of characters.
Is the Penguin totally evil? Or can you reason with him? Can the Penguin do good things?
I think actually a better example.
He's not out of touch.
I think actually a better example would be Venom, especially in his somewhat mid to later days, where I often describe him as he wasn't evil, he was just an asshole. In Spider-Man, the Lizard is the same way. He's oftentimes trying to do what he thinks is a good thing. Mm-hmm. He's not out.
Turn all of humanity into lizards?
Well, yes. I'll bleep that out as it's a spoiler. But nonetheless.
I'm talking comics. I'm not even talking movie here.
So. Oh, he did that in the comics?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Never mind, then I'll leave it in. Okay, yeah. But the point being, though, that, correct me if I'm wrong, Wayne, but there are scenes in the comics where in one scene he's trying to rob a bank, and in the next scene he's trying to protect his wife and kid.
Lizard? Generally, no. In fact, in the end, Lizard ate his son.
Oh, never mind. Okay. No. Venom's like it, though, because doesn't Venom have an opportunity at one point to kill Spider-Man, but
yeah.
Spider-Man is supporting a bus full of people, and Venom, out of mercy for the people on the bus, walks away.
The Eddie Brock Venom was definitely a nuanced character.
Yeah.
He became a dark hero.
And so, right, you can look at Toxin, who's kind of the good guy, except he goes out at night and does really horrid things, because the guy gives, what is it, the 2 hours a night to his symbiote to run amok or something like that. But he's a good guy. He's a cop. I don't know. I don't want to get too caught up in that.
But I mean, it really goes back to the feel, too. Like I said, Joker, I think, is a good example for Batman. Batman is a character that won't cross the line, won't kill. And you present him with a character, basically a character that is insane.
Right.
A character that is purely evil.
Hey, he's not insane. Joker, you know, just likes pulling boners.
Well, and
hey, that's canon. Don't laugh.
I know. I laugh because it's canon. Joker's boner is well documented on superdickery.com. I'll link that in the show notes for anyone who's not familiar with what we're talking about. But
oh, everybody's familiar with Joker's boner.
Because he was going to make sure that he's going to pull the biggest boner anyone has ever seen.
That's right.
But Chad, you may not fall under this category. You may be one of those rare birds who can distance himself enough from a character to play anything. But I think with most people, myself included, playing evil and playing it well is a question of playing acceptable evils. Here's what I mean.
I say Pat Stark characters all have soft spots. Everyone
with Gnarl, he was brutal, oftentimes mercilessly brutal. But brutality doesn't bother me.
You know, this last Sunday, this is a little bit of where this discussion topic's coming from. We played a game. It was Dread, only without zombies, more of the traditional Dread with the questionnaires and the Jenga Tower and stuff like that. But it was a haunted house Dread. And it was based on Michael Meehaus. He's told us multiple times how to pronounce
Let's
it.
Let's just refer to him as the ultimate Dread GM.
The ultimate Dread GM, yes. He ran a game at Fear the Con that was called Dread Staring Down the Void, and it was about a haunted house. And it was about a house that was not so much inhabited by an intelligence, but it reflected the occupant's darkness back at them and magnified it and trapped them in it because of it. And I really enjoyed the game a lot. And the game only worked if you made a character and filled out the character questionnaire being as depraved as you can, yet still be a realistic character. I mean,
you had to have something the house could throw back at you. Otherwise, it was going to be a boring game.
Yeah, right? And the worse it is, the better the game was for that. And the game is intentionally taboo. He did like over 18 and we're playing in a side room and this is going to be dealing with taboo subjects. There may be like triggers for some people. If you have that, don't play this game. And we did. It was a great game. It was a wonderful game. I ran it for these guys. I ran it for Beth, Pat, and Wayne. It was good. It was very good. And these guys made really, really dark characters. And Pat made the darkest character I have ever seen him play. And it was darker than all the rest.
Well, so and he Pat, still had a soft spot.
But I didn't. He had a soft spot, and I couldn't break him.
Right.
I was trying to throw this at him, and I was trying to break the character, and I couldn't. See, and it was the last 30 seconds of the game. I threw the last little thing I had out, and I'm just like, nah, he's gonna plow right through this because he's so evil. And boom, it broke him. And I honestly, I wanted to stand up and go, yes, yes.
And then I killed all the characters.
But it, like I said, I think for most people, it comes down to you have to find what for you is a tolerable evil.
Yeah.
I've seen Pat play a variety of dark and even outright evil characters. I could never picture Pat playing William Gacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could never picture
Pat.
He came
damn close.
I could never picture Pat playing Adolf Eichmann.
No.
Because guess what? They sent kids right into those Zyklon B chambers. Mm-hmm. For Pat, I think it's the same thing that I've got. It's just maybe Pat's a little bit more evil than I am. So there's he's got a broader range of hideous things that are acceptable. Yeah.
Well, Pat will never play a character that will harm a kid. I will never play a character that will harm an animal.
We all have...
At least the two of us I know have soft spots that we aren't able to get
you
past.
Know, for me, it's not a soft spot. For me, it's something very different. There are too many things in my life that I have been deeply hurt by, and I cannot explore those themes because of the fact that I don't want to be reminded of them or don't want to become a part of them. I'm so repulsed by them because of the damage that they have done to me personally. I simply can't play those characters.
I do have a couple things like that for me, too, that I can't even watch in a movie.
And Gnarl is like would be that way. Nothing I've ever experienced. Some of the other dark characters I've played over the years. I had not been
a great
like
character.
Anything great that I've ever experienced.
So let's do a quick...
Well, hang on. Let me ask this question for you guys real quick. Are you guys at all familiar with Shakespeare?
Yes. No. Never heard of him.
Who?
Hitler?
Funny. Shakespeare wrote Macbeth. And
what
Macbeth,
you say?
I'm going to wait.
I didn't even...
Somebody Google.
Bleep out that name. I can't believe he said that.
Spoiler.
Bastard.
You only... It's only an issue if you say it in a theater.
Well, we are on a stage at the moment, so f*** you.
Well, I'm not. I'm on my couch. It's very comfortable.
Well, you can be wherever you want to.
All the world's a stage.
Exactly.
You cannot say Macbeth anymore.
Anyway, your point?
I'm going to say it. Macbeth is basically a case study in evil.
Boy,
is
it?
It is the progression of a slightly morally reprehensible person into abject evil and insanity. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that prior to an event, and I'll get into that in a second, but prior to an event, I was very much like Dan and Wayne in as much as I couldn't play the bad guy in video games. I couldn't play the bad guy in role-playing games. I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to explore those themes. But then I went and I saw this amazingly awesome and terrifying, and I do mean terrifying, version of Macbeth. My background is theater major, can you tell? But anyway, so I went and saw this absolutely terrifying and amazingly well-done version of Macbeth and really kind of sat down with a group of other theater-minded people and sat down and kind of talked about it, and we really kind of got into it in depth. I won't bore any of you with the details of that conversation, but the long and the short of it is, like, I really at that point wanted to kind of start studying what makes somebody evil, what makes somebody do awful, awful things and still think that they're right and righteous. So every single character that I've created, that I've built as an evil character or as a dark character or as a morally reprehensible character, has been kind of chasing that dream without actually doing it myself.
Yeah, and I think that's the difficulty I have, is I feel like I'm doing it myself. In the same way, I am fascinated by what makes somebody an evil person and yet think they're right, but it's very academic. It's very hands-off. It's like looking at something in a petri dish. You know, I can look at these bacteria or these viruses and be fascinated by how they attack and destroy cells. That doesn't mean I want to inject myself with them. And in the same way, I can tell you with some of the worst people in history, what drove them to do what they did and how they justified it. But to actually put myself in those shoes and start trying to think like that person, like, you know, Chad says, well, this happens. And I have to think, well, what would this person do? And now all of a sudden I'm swimming in that petri dish. And it starts to really, who is exactly right? That is what my brain says. Is my brain's like, what the hell is wrong? I hate this character. And I hate this character to the point that I don't even want to be around this character. But that's because of the fact that, once again, to me, goes back to, I'm not saying Gnarl was a good guy, but Gnarl was an acceptable evil. Yeah, he was an evil that just did not strike close to home on things that have hurt me, on things that disturb me. Mm-hmm. He was just brute force. He was just going to slaughter his way from point A to point B. But point B wasn't necessarily a bad place.
And there were people in the world who were doing far worse.
Yeah.
And not slaughtering their way to, from point A to point B. And their B was a bad place. And what they were doing to get to B was a bad thing.
So
it's not that I'm not sensitive to that kind of thing, because I have been hurt before. I've been hurt badly before.
No, you haven't.
By certain... Yes, I have.
You have to have a heart to be hurt.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Now, I had that removed after I got hurt. But I have something that I refer to as text mode. I visualize everything that's input into my brain, no matter how vicious or vile it is, as text on a page. Text on a page isn't scary. Text on a page isn't frightening. Text on a page can't hurt me. So I usually can delve into some pretty dark areas without triggering those things that would cause me pain, which has been very useful in the pursuit of some of the characters that I've had to play, or wound up playing. And the other thing is that there was something I was reading the other day. It was a little test. It's a little story. And you guys might have heard of it, but I'm gonna quick do it for you real quick. This young woman, her mother dies. She goes to the funeral, and at the funeral, she meets the man of her dreams. But because of circumstances or what have you, she doesn't wind up getting his name. She doesn't wind up getting really any information about him other than the fact that she knows this is the man that she's destined to be with for the rest of her life. After the funeral, she can't figure out who he was. Nobody really seems to know who he associates with or who he really was or how to get in contact with him. 2 weeks later, she kills her sister. Why would she do that?
So he'd go to the funeral.
That's what I say. If anyone has heard it before, let someone who hasn't done it.
Oh,
I got it right first try. When I first heard it, I had no problem with it. You know, I knew exactly why she did it.
Yeah.
I was actually going a different tack where it's like she didn't know who the guy was. She didn't know anything about him. She couldn't talk to him. She couldn't get in contact with him. She couldn't call him. And she just couldn't figure out why. It's like, well, yeah, they're going to put him in the ground in 20 minutes. He's the dead guy.
No. No, it's a train of logic. She knows that if
mine's funnier, Wayne.
Chad's is funnier, but how you get there is a simple train of logic. This person was at the funeral of someone that she knew. Thus, if she kills her sister, he probably knows her sister and he'll show up at that funeral too.
Yeah.
Thus, she can run into him again at the funeral because they know the same people and will very likely attend.
This is a test of how a psychopath thinks, isn't it? Isn't that what that's from?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. There's an actual psychological study that came up with that particular scenario, and they posed it to a bunch of actual psychopaths and sociopaths, and generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, that was the conclusion they came to. Now, this isn't obviously a definitive test, so if you did
because I get came that up answer, with it first try, no problem.
Oh, and he doesn't have a soul either.
Well, it's a matter of how you think logically. Test is supposed to say, if you can logically distance the family connection, you know, if your mind automatically jumps there, then you're more likely to be a sociopath.
Well, here's the thing, though, that I think in our case, we were able to come up with it because, I don't know, being role players, putting ourselves in somebody else's shoes is what we
do. It's a game, and we're trying to game it.
I answered it before I'd ever role play.
Yeah, so, I mean, I caught the relationship, excuse the pun, pretty quickly. The question is, would I say that as writer in her shoes? Would I do that? And the answer is no. And this goes back to, I think, what it means to play a dark character. A dark character or an evil character is fundamentally one thing, selfish. Now, not all selfishness is evil. For example, if you're thirsty, you go and get water to drink. That's a selfish act. That is not an evil act, okay? But it is a self-centered act. So not all
bacteria they're consuming in the water. That's a life you've just snuffed out.
So not all selfishness
makes it taste good.
Is evil. But I believe that all evil stems from selfishness. You know, let's take Gnarl's case. What he was trying to do was in many ways a selfless thing. He was trying to build a society that would allow his people, well after he was dead, to thrive and to succeed. But why was he willing to butcher his way from A to B to get there? Because he had no patience for the people that were in his way, because they had become an impediment to his goal. And thus the darkness in him was fundamentally selfish in motivation, even though his end goal was actually pretty selfless. You know, if I look at other dark characters I've played, I played a character many years ago who's one of the better characters I think I've played in a sci-fi game. And this guy came from a place where there was a lot of conflict between humans and aliens. There really was no peace between humans and any alien race that they had come into contact with. And so as a result, he was very racist. He was very pro-human bigoted. And, you know, when I look at that, well, why was he that way? Well, because of the fact that he had seen and experienced things that he couldn't put behind him. And so even when he was trying to achieve good things, you know, for example, at one point he ended up with a starship. And he was trying to do good things with the starship. He wasn't trying to destroy the universe. He was actually trying to save quite a bit of it. But there was what, for our group, became one of the famous things, the yellow line. There was a yellow line painted across part of the bridge, and anything that was not Homo sapien was not allowed across that line. And why was he doing this? Because he didn't trust them. Well, why was trust an issue? Because he was trying to succeed in what he was doing with this ship. So he's out there doing selfless things, but ultimately his darkness, his brutality came from a very selfish place.
I would say in my case, I think it boils down to something even simpler. I, as a person, have a white knight complex. I want to be a hero. In an RPG, whether it be a video game or a tabletop, you can be anything you want. I want to be a hero. If I can be anything I want, I'm going to be a hero.
Do you
want to
be the greatest American hero?
Depending on the game.
Fair enough. Well, let me ask you guys this. Dan talked about a couple of his dark characters in the past. Pat, you're one who doesn't necessarily like to play dark characters. What are some of your favorite dark characters that you've played? Maybe even talk about this one you played on Sunday.
I enjoyed that character for what it was. And that one was, like you said, it was especially dark. But it's the game that did it. It was a one-shot game, and it was a game where it's the premise is the more depraved you go, the better this game's going to be. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, I threw off the governor, so to speak, and went with it. So it was fun. And
you hated people who were happy.
Yes.
And you killed people who were happy, but you got off on them being in pain.
Yeah,
But and if the they were anywhere they between had be, happiness they and were, pain,
they
had,
it was
they were
well,
safe.
It was pain. It was the negative emotions.
Yeah,
upset, afraid. Mm-hmm. Afraid is a big one. That kind of a thing. And they made peace with themselves, or they were resigned to their fate.
Yeah,
and
which
they
is
accepted
what,
their fate.
Which is what Wayne.
Then I had.
Did,
then I was done with them.
You didn't even kill them. Yeah,
exactly. They weren't even worth killing because. Right. You're resigned to it now. It's like, no, that's you've taken away my joy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, dark characters that I've played in the past, and actually a lot of my characters tend to be this way. And they're not necessarily the Batman. They're more of, well, what you said is good analogy, Dan. They're selfish. You know, that darkness comes from more of a self-centered motivation of this is about me and I'm sort of darkened to myself and I will do it's sort of a ends justify the means. Mm-hmm. Very Machiavellian.
Yeah,
they
seem to me to be the way that they'll it's be. Like they feel they deserve.
Yes.
What they want. You
and play. I will do what I need to get it.
Yeah.
I've always played, especially with my longest running character, my favorite dark character, is very smart about how he did it. He would do the things, he would do the dark things, but you do it smartly. And by that I mean you don't do it in front of the good guy characters. The shit you do, you pull it off behind the scenes so they don't know about it. Mm-hmm. Because the less they know, the better it is for you. If they can't point a finger at you and prove that you did it, hey, plausible deniability, people. Mm-hmm. That's the way to go. But no, so I do like to play those kind of characters. And I guess I don't cross lines. I absolutely do have lines, you know, that I don't cross. There are many things that I will not do, going back to sort of the acceptable evil kind of thing. But there are the acceptable darknesses, I guess, is what it's called. Because I don't even generally stray into the evil realm of the characters that I play. But I do enjoy playing dark characters.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, what are some darkness that you have played?
Okay, well, going back to this one shot from this weekend, when I really look at what I did with the character, I personally had to punish the character in creation just for what he was. It was a character who, as a teenager, in a fit of jealous rage, killed his best friend because his best friend stole his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And that's where the character was as a teenager. By the point we see the character as an adult, he spent his whole life from that point on expecting to be caught and feeling guilty about it. Because I just couldn't do a character that was reveling in what they had done. So it's a character that is basically trying to punish himself for what he's done for the rest of his life up until that point in the game. That was interesting to explore for, like I said, for a session.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to play that character for a campaign or anything.
No.
But there was a lot of neurosis going on within his head. And it was easy for him basically to snap and lose it because he had been through, you know, things that had messed with his mind. When it got to that point of the house, he was an easy one for you to push the buttons on.
Because a lot of your character's darkness occurred in the past and fear motivated you.
Yes.
And fear motivated you to do not good things or even neutral things. Fear motivated you to do bad things and to selfishly protect yourself to the detriment of others. I mean, like, you tried to kill Pat. You tried to brain him with a candlestick.
To avoid going to jail.
Because the house manifested what you thought was the murder weapon, and you hit it, and Pat's character didn't know anything about the murder weapon, didn't know anything about whatever, but knew that you were trying to hide something, and he wanted to make you as uncomfortable as possible.
Exactly.
I tasted
your fear, and it was delicious.
And then the character from that point decided that there are supernatural evil things happening in this house. This house needs to not exist.
Yeah.
So he spent the rest of the game trying to blow up the house, of which he finally succeeded at the end.
It was an interesting study of evil. Your approach to it, my approach to it was different in the fact that, like I said, the house didn't scare me.
Right.
I knew what was going on, and I relished in it. It didn't bother me.
Each of the three characters found some sort of redemption there at the end, and then I blew them up.
Yeah. And what was interesting, too, about the game and the characters was that the point was, I told them that if the tower falls, because we were playing Dread, if the tower falls, nobody dies. I'm like, that's not what's going to happen. And they're like, well, what's going to happen? I said, well, there's only one way to find that out. But the tower didn't drop. The kicker of it was that basically the person who dropped the tower, I was going to pull them aside into the other room and said, okay, basically, you lost the struggle. The house has won. The house has possessed you. But I'm not playing you. You're going to play it out. And what you are doing now, you're still you, but you are trying to break the other characters. You're not trying to kill them necessarily, but you are trying to break them. You're trying to play on their guilt. You're trying to either crush them or you're trying to make them more evil so the house can continue to feed on them. They never dropped the tower, but Pat was so in sync with the evil of the house by playing his character, he was working for the house. He was just in line with it. And it got to a point where I noticed that, and I'm like, if Pat drops the tower, there's no freaking point. And so I had Pat stop doing pulls. Yeah. I don't know if anybody noticed it or not.
That. He only did one or two. I'm not getting pulls anymore unless I volunteered.
Yeah, exactly. And we just kind of kept rolling with it. And it was really neat. I wish Beth were here. She could talk about the awesome, dark, crazy character her character played. And so are there any other dark characters that you've enjoyed or played?
The only other dark character I've ever done was Sir William. Where he had, you know, he had a troubled past, but he had lines he wouldn't cross. He didn't let any of the rest of the group know he had those lines. But, you know, we talked about it behind the scenes, things that it was and wasn't doing as he went around town.
Yeah.
But he would be the only other one where he had a troubled past. And even from arc one to arc two, he lightened up a bit. You know, he let go of some of his anger as he traveled in that mid period.
You killed the antagonist, too.
Yeah.
You bastard. And that one was interesting, too, because that was the greatest NPC I had ever made.
I had to kill it.
Yeah, you had to. That NPC was so nuanced, had so much to his background and character, that all of the players were like, this is the bad guy. This is the guy that's going down. We're going to take his ass out.
No, it wasn't. And, I tried to save him.
Well, no. And then they came around, and as they got to know him, they're just like, we don't think we should kill him. You know, it's like, we actually kind of like the guy. He's pretty charming.
I don't know that I ever liked him so much.
And I don't think that you hardly liked anybody.
I could tell that conflict was on his script. I was trying to take him off script. It was a strategist thought of, he wants to die. He's throwing himself into the arms of death, which means he feels he has something to gain by it. And so I felt the best move we could make strategically was to take him off script, and then Wayne stabbed him.
He pushed all of my character's buttons.
Yeah.
There was no way, based on what I knew of the character playing at the time, that he wouldn't do that with the conversation he just had with the guy. Because the guy hit all of his buttons at that point.
And what was interesting is that the character wasn't actually trying to kill himself. He was an immortal. The immortals who ruled the realms, like, they were the power, they were the dictators, and nobody else was immortal except them and their family. They lived in gilded cages. They played it safe for millennia, and they had surrounded themselves with fortresses and armies and were impregnable. Basically, all they did was rule. They had stopped living. And he was trying to make a societal shift. He was trying to make a societal change. he lived that. He didn't just talk about it or agree with the philosophy or try to. He lived that. It wasn't that he was trying to kill himself. It was that he was trying to not be safe.
Seems like he succeeded.
Yeah, which was kind of dumb. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, that was kind of dumb, but that's how the character was. Not that he was stupid, but that he no longer wanted to live a safe life. And he wanted to lead by example. And he wanted to live again. And you don't live by locking yourself in a tower and surrounding yourself by guards. You live by facing down the knoll.
You lived by getting stabbed by Wayne's... Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, you
no,
lived you don't. By getting stabbed in the back by Wayne's character.
This is also going to be interesting coming up in our next campaign, because I think starting this coming week, we're looking at picking up Blood Moon Goblins, John's game. Goblins, by their nature, are evil. Mm-hmm. The goblin that I'm playing, I'm going to play Brat, who's part of the canon now, but was also the character I created for the original game. His only evil is cowardice, which I can't say is a trait that I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. I don't feel I'm a coward, but it's not sort of a trait that I would endorse. But of all the evils to have, it's not a terribly big one.
No.
You know, if William Gacy's worst problem had been cowardice, we would not remember the man the way we do. Mm-hmm. Something that I would love to play one of these years, and I think it was that Plain City of Villains that got me to thinking about this, is I'd love to play Necessary Evil at some point. Because of the fact that, I tell you, I put, when we were...
Maybe not you Savage Worlds, but yeah.
When we were playing City of Villains, I put a lot of thought into why these characters were doing what they were doing. And I would love to try that out in a Necessary Evil game.
You just want to shoot the big bad with a pistol.
Adam, what about you?
I have played many, many dark characters over the years, but there are three major ones that come to mind. One of them recently, I actually mentioned earlier in the show, when Wayne, in his Fear the Con, a Barzbard game, he was not, quote-unquote, part of my study of evil. He was just me being a dick, mostly. The long and the short of it was is that the game concept is pretty simple. We're all bards. The game was kind of framework, like it was a bunch of bards getting together and telling a story about a bunch of bards that went out and did stuff. And we just tortured this poor paladin NPC that was with us.
Yes, you did.
There were so many horrible things that happened to that man that I'm surprised that he's still sane. Oh, wait, no, he's dead. Really, it was just me. Wayne's wife was there, and there was one other guy? Two other guys?
There were three other guys, actually.
Was there really?
Yeah.
Well, and Mobius. And Mobius and I, just for whatever reason, we just fed off of each other, and it just was awful.
Yeah, and for the record,
we came up with.
The paladin wasn't sane. He lost his mind entirely, and you mind-wiped him so he'd forget the things you did to him so you could keep going.
That's right. I forgot about that. It was beautiful. So that was just really a bunch of dickery, really, more than anything else. It wasn't being a dark character. It's just being a completely immoral ass for 3 hours one day. But other characters that I've played, the first one that I played that was really, really dark was a character by the name of Wolf. He wasn't so much evil as he saw the world very much black and white. And if something was wrong, he couldn't let it live. So he wound up killing a lot of NPC characters. And his kind of saving grace was the fact his character was kind of destined to help the PCs, which is part of the only reason why, A, they let him hang around, and B, he let himself hang around with them, because I don't think he would have. Now, none of the PCs, it happened, didn't fall into his area of black. You know, this is what is wrong and therefore must be killed, which was convenient, because that was one group that I don't think I could have pulled that off with. But that was his shtick. And then more recently, and he's still kind of an ongoing character, is a character I have in a World of Darkness campaign who is a complete and utter sociopath. He is a changeling, and I don't know if you guys know anything about changelings, but basically changelings are people that get sucked into the fairy realm and are basically tortured for an indeterminate amount of time, and their humanness is changed and altered by the torture that they endure and the ambient magic that exists in fairy, making them kind of take on aspects of the type of slave that they are forced to be. So, like, if they're a pleasure slave, their bodies shift and morph to whatever tastes that the fairy that is torturing them prefers. Or some of them literally can be lanterns.
I tell you, for me, if I ever play a Changeling game, I just want that GM to know right now, it's pretty much going to be two plot points. Plot point one is kill the fairy that took me. Plot point two is kill the thing that replaced me. That's my hit
That's
list.
That's pretty common, actually.
Yep.
That's actually extremely common, and there's a lot of headway that can be made with both of those. Because killing a fairy is not easy. Fairies are basically concepts, and you basically have to make everybody that believes in that fairy not believe in that fairy anymore. This particular character, he was a Rat Pack era hitman in Vegas that kind of literally fell accidentally into the fairy realm, was captured and tortured. And time works differently in the fairy realm than it does in our realm, so he actually popped out in the modern era. And he's old school. He's, you know, that was what his shtick was, and he was a hitman to boot. So he's just this complete and utter sociopath. And the other players in the group are too afraid of him really do anything to him. Even now, like when we talk about the character, they talk about him like he's some kind of boogeyman. And it's fantastic. I love it. I love every minute of it. So yeah, he's been a really interesting one to play. He does have a soft spot for certain things. The people that are his blood, his family, he, in spite of several times where he thought that they probably would deserve it, he has avoided bringing them harm and hurting them or doing anything like that. But I'll tell you this much, when he's told zero body count, it doesn't say anything about kneecaps or elbows or joints or maiming anybody. He has no issue with that. So he's been an interesting character.
And that's just when he goes out to get a hot dog.
Yeah.
Pretty much. $3.50
Back in my day, this cost a nickel.
I ain't giving you no damn $3.50
It's about that time I realized that the Girl Scout was a horrible monster from the Paleolithic area.
Eight story tall crustacean from the Bailey's Joker.
I don't even watch South Park, but I've seen those clips. Oh. And they just make me laugh so hard every time.
I know. Same here. I don't watch South Park, but the $3.50 thing. We're going to have to do something special for episode 350. That is our true X100 episode, is we have to do something really good for 350. I'm still thinking, well, episode 1000 is the one we're going to do with Richard Geary out in space. So
check.
So, looking back at the length of this episode,
we have cookies.
We're going to split this into two, so you are now probably at the end of the second episode.
I was going to say, which they'll now know at the end of the second one.
But we recorded these as one, so since I did not throw the announcement in there, I'll go ahead and put it in here at the end. If you have not already, don't forget to go check the rules for the postcards from the dungeon promotion, the cross promotion we're doing with the other shows in our little affiliate thing. And
visit our forums,
and
they're awesome.
Yeah, sure, check all that stuff out. As always, I'll probably have at least a couple things in the show notes for you to click on.
Oh, and check out Kicked in the Dice Picks Players Edition, because it's a superior edition.
Yeah,
it releases episode. Case. Yeah,
yes.
So thank you guys for tuning in. You guys have a great week, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jerk.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.